podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two, that's James Hamm, I'm Kyle Madsen. Hanging out with you until noon, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Hanging out with you till noon, then we'll hand it off to D'Lo and KC, and they would take you up to 4 o'clock right here on Sacramento's Sports Leader. We've been talking a ton about the NBA draft, and we will continue to do so. Neek Clifford, the number 24 overall pick for Sacramento, his college coach, Ali Farouk-Manesh, is going to join us at 11:45. Farouk-Manesh is now the head coach at Colorado State, but he was an assistant that helped was a key part of Neek Clifford's development over his 2 years at Colorado State. So really excited to get his perspective on one of the newest members of the Sacramento Kings. But I think spinning it forward now, we've kind of assessed what the draft class looks like, how Reynaud and how Clifford could impact the Kings roster. What's the next step now? I know they still need a point guard. Still got to figure out the point guard thing. Yeah, we got it.
Okay. The first thing that has to happen here, again, free agency opens on Monday, right? It opens on the 30th. That's when things are going to go crazy.
Yeah.
We're going to start hearing all kinds of things going on and, you know, who the Kings are chasing, who they might land, all that stuff. But before that happens, they have to make a decision on Keon Ellis. And so that's...
Oh, yeah, that's coming up Sunday?
That's on Sunday. That's going to be the first step here. And for me, it's a huge, huge decision, because what you hope is that they're able to figure out a way to take care of Keon without eating up all their cap space and sort of move forward with him as a player. They have two options. They can pick up his player option at $2 million, a little over $2 million bucks for this coming season, and then try to work out a long-term deal with him, or just let him work out the season at $2 million bucks. But at the end of that, he would be an unrestricted free agent. If they decline his option, he becomes a restricted free agent this summer, then he's open to any team, but the Kings have the right to match any offer to him. So that would be step two. And of course, there's only one team in the league with true cap space. That's the Brooklyn Nets, which of course, Jordy Fernandez is there and probably absolutely adores Keon Ellis because they were here together. But there's also all of these teams with mid-level exceptions of $14 million. So you run the risk of Keon getting a much bigger contract and also like shrinking this window you have to go negotiate with other people, right?
Yeah.
So that's going to be one of the things that has to happen between now and the next time we see everybody here. And we talk to you on the radio on Monday. We will by Sunday afternoon know what's happening with Keon and maybe sooner. That's going to be the first thing. And secondly, like we were talking about a little bit at the break about Jake LaRavia. Jake LaRavia becomes, he's an unrestricted free agent. He'll drop into the free agent pool on Monday. The Kings will have an opportunity. They already have, an opportunity to open a window right now to negotiate with him. Whether they're going to land on a contract with him or not, I don't know. And that's because, like, look, he was acquired last season by the previous regime. And while he's young, and he's 6'8", and he provides, you know, a lot of what the Kings are looking for. You know, he's that bigger 3-4 that they kind of need, whether it's off the bench or whatever. We don't know how that's going to work out. The Kings are limited to a $5.1 million offer that they can extend to him. And that's it. They can go like a multi-year deal, or they can do a two-year deal, like a little over $10 million with a player option for year two. If they do something like that and he opts out, he gets his Larry Bird rights back and then he can sign for whatever. They're going to have to address that situation sooner rather than later. And the other thing I was going to bring up is, like, we keep talking about this type of player that the Kings are bringing in, right? This you know, physical, defensive-minded, you know.
Glue guys.
Glue guys and good culture guys, right? I asked Jake LaRavia about this during the season because this is the type of player that the Memphis Grizzlies always have a ton of, right? So we talk about, you know, teams that you want to go get a free agent from, Miami Heat. You want to get a free agent from Memphis because they had this culture There's the San Antonio Spurs were the team for years.
Yeah.
And the Kings were a pipeline. Like they got to get, you know, Garrett Temple, they, a Trey Lyles, a Chimezie Metu, these guys that you bring in because they played for the San Antonio Spurs and you know their standards there are extremely high. But I asked Jake LaRavia, like, hey, like, is it something that they do there once you get off, you know, the team plane, off the plane, and you're like, hey, I'm now a Memphis Grizzlies, and they're like, okay, here's your handbook on how to be tough and how to be an NBA player.
Yeah.
He's like, no, no, no. He's like, this is who I was before.
Right.
He's like, I think they look for players like me, and they accumulate players like me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really, it was interesting to hear, but also that's what Scott Perry's doing right now.
Yeah.
He's trying to find guys that play hard, that don't give up on any play, that they give you second, third efforts, that are tough, that they don't mind pushing back and are physical. And that's, it's reminds us of the Memphis Grizzlies. But again, I think it's sort of a unique look into the way that the Grizzlies might search for these types of players, and how the Kings might be a team who's now mirroring some of that in their approach to finding players.
So, with all that in mind, you have changed my mind about Cam Whitmore.
Oh, yeah?
So Cam Whitmore, according to Kelly Iko of The Athletic, is being shopped by the Houston Rockets. Not a surprise. Cam Whitmore, a super talented young player who couldn't get off the end of the bench for Houston. I think he spent time in the G League at one point last year.
Oh, yeah. He's torn up the G League a couple of times.
Yeah. So, but just the kind of player that you and I went, man, switchable defensively, great athleticism, just kind of fits the archetype of player the Kings don't have. But the more you talked about just now, the kind of player Sacramento's looking for, if they are looking for, just to continue using this name, the Jake LaRavia type, the glue guy type, the one who's not going to go give you 25 a night, but he's going to give you 6-7 points, going to grab a couple of rebounds, going to get you a steal, and just going to maybe do all the things that, like, outside of the box score that affect winning. Just the little things on the margins.
Yep.
I think if Cam Whitmore was doing those things, don't you think he would have played for the Rockets last year? A Rockets team that lost in 7 to the Golden State Warriors in part because they didn't have enough offensive creativity in the half court. They could have used Cam Whitmore, but he didn't play because the Rockets are accumulating Tari Eason types, Fred VanVleet types. Amen Thompson is the peak of that archetype of player. They had a bunch of these guys, and I feel like he would have found his way into the regular rotation if he was the kind of player that Scott Perry and Doug Christie are looking for, and I just don't think he is.
I don't know. When I watch Cam Whitmore play, he plays with the physicality that the Kings, like, so desperately need. He's a dude who does not mind running over somebody at all. Like, there, he is a beast of a player. But the problem that I see with him, and we're talking 6'7", 230. Like, this is a big dude.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, but the problem that I've seen with that team specifically is an overaccumulation of top-tier talent, of top-tier free, of top-tier draft picks. I mean, look at, they traded Jalen Green, who was, what, the second pick in the draft or the third pick in the draft? Jabari Smith Jr., second pick in the draft. Amen Thompson. Top tier, what, fourth pick in the draft? Reed Sheppard, fourth pick in the draft. Tari Eason, 16th pick in the draft. Like, you can't play all your young players at one time. You bring in a Fred VanVleet to help, you know, be the adult in the room. You bring in Dylan Brooks, who I don't think is an adult in the room, but he's still a mature player.
Sure.
And that's what he's competing against. He's competing against Tari Eason, who is a higher pick, against Jabari Smith, who's a higher pick, against Jalen Green, who's a higher pick, against Dylan Brooks, who has, you know, the reputation around the league as, like, a physical defensive player, against Jeff Green, who, you know, like, just keeps playing and doesn't matter how old
he's
he is.
40.
I think he's like 47 at this
point. He played for the Sonics.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He definitely played for the Sonics.
Yeah.
But
is that right?
Yeah. He for sure played for the Sonics. He was a ooh, maybe. Yeah. He did. Yeah.
Are we certain?
Yeah. I'm almost positive.
All right. Yeah, he did in the 2007-2008 season, their final season in Seattle.
Yeah, the 2007-2008 season.
I was in high school, bro.
He's still playing.
I'm 34.
He's still playing.
That's crazy.
But I'm not out on Cam Whitmore. What I get with him is he's lost in the shuffle.
Okay, and maybe this would be worth calling somebody from Houston and getting their thoughts. But the fact that this isn't a player who just should have played more minutes. This is a guy who I don't think played in the playoffs at all. Yeah, he got 2 minutes of garbage time in game two and a couple minutes of garbage time in games five and six.
Yeah.
He was not a factor in there. He played late in the season after they'd punted. He played 32 minutes, 38 minutes, 18 minutes. But prior to that, a minute. Here's 12 minutes in a blowout win, DNP.
Yeah.
13 minutes in a blowout win, bunch of DNPs. Like, this is the concern here is less about, oh, he couldn't, or the issue for me, I don't think it's, oh, he couldn't crack this rotation. There's just too many good players. I just don't think he was either the play style or there was some deficiency that he didn't fit that mold for the Rockets. Because I think if he did, I think he would have played at least a little. This is a dude who didn't play at all.
No, I get that, but Jayshon Tate didn't play hardly at all either. You know, and, mm-hmm. and he's going back there. And look, they just brought in Kevin Durant. Like, how are you going to play a guy like Cam Whitmore? The one thing I'd point out to you, Kyle, is mm-hmm. Cam Whitmore can't walk into a bar and order a drink for another, like, week and a half.
That's so crazy.
I mean, he's 20 years old, 354 days.
That's so crazy to me.
So, like, look, when we talk about underutilized talent hiding on other NBA rosters that could walk into your building and be a star, mm-hmm. Cam Whitmore is on a short list. I mean, we're talking about a guy who, in his rookie season, averaged, you know,
24, 7, and 1 per 36.
Yeah.
1.5.
But he averaged 12.3 in 18 minutes a night in 47 games.
Yeah.
I mean, he walked in the door and could play. And this is a guy who was supposed to go in the top five of the draft and fell on draft night. So, sure, there might be some issues here, but as far as, like, the type of player, the physicality, the strength that he plays with, I would gamble on a guy like Cam Whitmore. And not only would I gamble on him, I would gamble on him and potentially use him as a starter moving forward because I do think he's one of those underutilized players around the league. Now, you might get him in your building and his play style is just totally wrong.
That's, I think, because yeah. You wrote, I'm all in, was your...
Oh, yeah, I've always been. I love Cam Whitmore as a prospect.
That is a steady take you've had. I'm of the belief that if you're going to be all in, where you're going to give up, like, real assets in this deal, there has to be some assurance on your side that he is that type of player. Because what you can't have is you're giving up a first-round pick or a future first for Cam Whitmore. You're getting him in your building, and then he's sitting on the end of your bench instead.
No, I get that, but I don't look at Cam Whitmore as a player who is going to cost you that at all. Like, you're looking at a player who's in his second season, and he's already, like, they're shopping him. Like, it's just like when you go buy a car, the second you walk off the lot, you just lost, you know, 30% of your investment.
Mm-hmm.
You're so far upside down, and that's the same thing. You have him in your building for 2 years. He hasn't been able to break through.
Mm-hmm.
But again, break through against Amen Thompson and Jabari Smith and Dylan Brooks and Jayshon Tate. And just
I wonder if the argument
dudes.
You're making is what every NBA front office will be talking themselves into.
Oh, I think so.
Which is where I don't think you're going to go like, yeah, hey, here's a couple seconds. And the Kings don't even have second round picks to give away.
No, they don't have a bunch of them. They definitely could give up a second round pick in next year's draft and maybe land a player like that. But also, like, maybe it's a place where you look at a guy like Devin Carter and say, hey, he doesn't fit what we're doing fully. But would you guys like a combo guard that plays defense and maybe, like, fits better with your system?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it'd be something like where you can make a complete swap like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Houston, because of their acquisitions, they're probably a team who's looking at a big tax bill. Even if it's, like, going from, you know, maybe they take on a player like Devin Carter, maybe they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I would at least call because this is a type of player, again, you're looking around the league and saying, okay, how many underutilized players are there that might be able to be impactful for me?
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of them that just jumps out.
All right. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. I'm going to ruin everybody's cornflakes next.
Uh-oh.
This is the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We'll keep talking Kings, and then Colorado State head coach Ali Farokhmaneš. He coached Nick Clifford during his 2 years at Colorado State. He's going to join us on the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
James Hamm is there. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you till noon. Ali Farokhmaneš will be joining us at 11:45. Who the heck is that? Well, he coached Nick Clifford at Colorado State. Farokhmaneš is now the head men's basketball coach for the Rams, but he was an assistant on that staff for several years, including during the time when they were bringing Nick Clifford over from the University of Colorado, and then he helped oversee his development that made him a first-round pick in this year's NBA draft for the Sacramento Kings. It's been a lot of sunshine, a lot of rainbows. The Kings front office, you know, kind of figuring things out in terms of the type of player they need, and you love the archetype of Maxime Raynaud, and you like what Nick Clifford could bring to, mm-hmm. to Sacramento. What are the expectations, though, for these two picks? Because the optimism says, oh my God, the Kings are winning 50 games. I don't think that's necessarily the case, because while optimism reigns this time of year, and I don't begrudge that, I think every team is probably super psyched with what they're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
I nothing has happened yet that makes me go, wow, the Kings have really won the offseason. They've hit it out of the park. I still feel like this is a team that's going to sit between like 40 and 44 wins, depending on how the ball bounces.
Yeah, as of today. And to be honest with you, that might be a little high as well. Like, I don't know sure. that I have them winning that many games at this point.
Mm-hmm.
This is where the real work begins.
Right.
You know, the draft is like, it's truly the first avenue of like building your team during the offseason. It's the first thing that happens. There mm-hmm. are trades that have gone on before the draft. But this is a moment where you've got to like look at what you're doing as far as, you've checked boxes. You added depth, mm-hmm. right? The teams in the league that are the best this season, Oklahoma City, Indiana, they had so much depth. It was crazy. I mean, when you lost, you know, Tyrese Haliburton in a playoff game mm-hmm. and you shift Nembhard over to that position and then you bring TJ McConnell off the bench, and then all of a sudden you got Benedict Mathurin backfilling, and you got like all of these players that like that team was so deep,
yeah.
and they could not withstand the loss of their best player or yeah. their superstar player. But again, it's the same thing with OKC. Like, they just had so much depth. You have to start somewhere, mm-hmm. and for me, that's where, I mean, the Kings only had eight players. They only have eight players walking until yesterday. That's all they have left on their roster
that are guaranteed
contracts. Right? And so, like, what happens next is, you know, it's going to be free agency. It's going to be trades. Like, this weekend, there could be trades.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple of days of free agency, there could be trades. But the free agency is starting on Monday. You got a $14.1 million trade exception. You got a biannual exception. Those are things that you can go out and actually improve your team and start building something. It's just going to depend on like how aggressive the Kings are. And they're like, so far they've been extremely aggressive to get their name in on a bunch of things.
Mm-hmm.
But you also got to be able to close some deals, and that's the deal. I think this team specifically, they need a trade like as soon as possible.
I agree.
In order to set up their free agency.
That is what I keep coming back to.
Yeah.
Because I keep going, all right, well, who's worth trading for? Are you making a deal for Ja Morant? Is he available? It seems like the Celtics are keen to hold on to Derek White, but is there a move you can make that gets them off of Derek White, or is there picks you can involve or players you can involve that get you to it? I keep coming back to that, because when you start going, okay, free agents, it's Dennis Schroeder, Tyus Jones is a name we've heard thrown around. Maybe you take a gamble on Trey Jones. Maybe you really like Trey Jones as a, was he 24, 25?
Yeah.
Guy in his mid-20s who still has some growth left in his development. Maybe you want to take a gamble there and you feel good about that. But either way, you probably need multiple players playing point guard. And if it's two guys that are sub-mid-level players, I come back to, it doesn't move the needle winning-wise for me. At least not to the point that you're going, okay, this is now a top six type of contender. Yeah, you might, again, win a game or two extra.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about winning a game or two extra from a team that won 40 last year. It is largely the same. So I don't think, real quick, I don't think the answer is going to be via free agency. There will be some signings. There will be some additions. But if the Kings are going to move out of this tier of team that they're in, where they're just kind of... they're making the playoffs depends on the play-in, and they're making the play-in depends on the Suns and the Blazers.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a space you don't want to be in. If they're going to get out of that tier, there has to be a trade in here. I don't think they're getting there via free agency.
No, I would agree with you. And that's just like, first of all, Sacramento's never been a hotbed for free agents.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go into a season and you don't have a bunch of money, they don't have natural cap space. They are not a cap space team.
No.
There's only one of them. The Nets are the only cap space team.
There's one, that is the one team that can absorb salary.
Yeah, and that's where, like, we've talked about this a little bit, but the Kings are playing in this area where they're over the salary cap but under the luxury tax, right? So there's this window that they can play in, and it's a big window. It's, you know, it's a lot of money. But at the end of the day, like, you've got to be able to, you know, manage that space in such a delicate way, because we talk about, hey, you'd love to see the Kings go out and get, you know, a player like, even if it's Dennis Schroeder, just so you know you have a point guard, right?
Yeah.
Right? And, like, maybe him and Malik Monk can man the position and you'll be fine.
Sure.
Right? So you got to go out and get one of those players. But if you decide to go spend that $14 million on one player, but you also have this situation with Keon Ellis where it's either $2 million or it's probably closer to $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you add those two things, that's $24 million between what you paid Keon and what you paid mm-hmm. Dennis Schroeder, and you're looking at, like, being over the luxury tax or being right around the luxury tax. Like, this team has to, like, the biggest way they're going to improve for me is always going to be via trade.
Uh-huh.
And then once you get done with that, it's going to be, okay, like, how can we improve on the margins? Is there a Jake LaRavia? Is there, like, a couple of players like that? Because, again, your mid-level, it can go to multiple players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can break that up into multiple contracts. And so, like, the Kings should have the ability to make improvements.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't think anyone is out there thinking, like, the Kings aren't going to go out and sign a LeBron James and everything's going to change.
Right.
No, like the path forward, you know, again, we always talk about the three ways. I think Jeff Petrie said it. This is something Scott Moak tweeted out the other day. Jeff Petrie always said the three ways to improve a team: the draft, free agency, and trades. And the draft is the biggest gamble of the three.
Yeah.
And that's where the Kings are.
Mm-hmm.
Like they've got some good depth that they just added, whether those guys play a ton in their first year or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Neat Clifford is probably going to play 16 to 20 minutes a night.
I think he's going to play. I feel good about Neat Clifford.
I think so too. But it really does depend on who else is on this team and how you create space for him. Because, you know, if you have a 35 minute per game small forward, that leaves 13 minutes per game at that position. And, you know, does Keegan Murray play some of that position? Like it gets a little complicated pretty quickly.
Yeah, man. I'm trying really, really hard to not overreact and to not fall into this, like, oh my God, everything is awful. Because ideally, Doug Christie and Scott Perry, a new era of Kings basketball, is going to change. You don't want to be, I forget if it was Damian or Kenny who's like, I'm not going to be, oh no, it was Jesse when we were talking about the Ace Bailey thing.
Yeah.
If the Kings make some crazy trade up into the early lottery and Ace Bailey falls to him, do you take him? And Jesse's like, you can't be beholden to what you used to do. You have to let that go. You have to act on now.
Mm-hmm.
But everything you just laid out points to what I perceive to largely be inaction. You needed to pick a path. You either needed to be a team that was going to be the ESPN 2026 NBA mock draft that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
The Kings are picking fifth.
Yeah.
In that mock draft. And so I don't know that they're going to be that bad though. And that's the problem. If they're picking fifth, fine. But I think they're too good to pick fifth, barring lottery luck.
Yeah.
Right? I think they're too good to go into the lottery with the fifth pick, which is a problem. But I don't think they're good enough to be a very serious playoff contender. And so you're just existing in this purgatory that we talk about.
No, I'm with you, but I want to see what this team looks like next Friday.
You know, absolutely.
I want to see what this team looks like a week and a half, 2 weeks from now, because that's where we're going to see like where the real substantive changes could come. And if they don't, then it's like, okay, we start assessing what exactly this is going to look like. And it probably won't be super, super rosy. Like, again, you drafted Neat Clifford. That might mean that you don't go out and even try to sign Jake LaRavia. Or maybe you look at Jake LaRavia as a four. And you know, maybe he does work within your system, but you know, if you already have DeMar DeRozan, you're not going to keep adding and adding and adding to the small forward position. You know, if you've got Zach LaVine at the two, you know, again, we all think, oh, you just trade that guy or give that guy. Like, sometimes that just doesn't materialize. I mean,
you can try.
Yeah, I mean, the Oklahoma City Thunder have built their entire, you know, dynasty, soon to be dynasty. On other teams not wanting players and then them accepting draft picks and salary to just absorb more assets, right? Well, the Kings don't have those assets. They're not flush with assets. Although I will say that the one other thing is that on Monday, on Tuesday, July 1st, they're all of a sudden going to have an extra first round pick to deal with.
And an extra second.
And an extra second. They'll get their access to their 2032 draft capital. And again, that might not seem like that much to people, but the Kings still walk into this with nine first round picks. You can say, oh, well, the 2027 Spurs pick is all tied up now, that 1 through 16. It's like, okay, it is, but it's protected 1 through 16. You can still trade the 1 through 16 protection to somebody else. So, like, there are
ways. I was going to ask that. So, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking about that today. So, you could theoretically, so you have a 2027 first that is top 16 protected. If that doesn't convey, it becomes their two 2027 second round picks.
Yep.
So, you could theoretically trade that 2027 first. So let's just to Memphis.
Yep.
You could send that to Memphis and say, hey, this is, you get this if it's 1 through 16.
Yep.
If you don't, could it then also convey to the two 2027 seconds? Because it's going to convey either way. So those 2 seconds are going to be available.
Yeah. You could probably put that kind of switch into it. Yes. Because, I mean, there are. Okay. If you look,
has less to do with like the Kings team building and more just the machinations of these deals.
Yeah, because there are second round picks out there that have like you only get the pick if it's pick 31 through 38, and then the next protection is 39 through 46, and then like if the pick falls in the back end of the draft, 47 through 60, it goes to a different team. They break it up. Like, there are crazy protections on second round picks that go, they convey for specific reasons. I think, like, in all honesty, you could even have the 2027 Spurs pick. You could trade it and say it's 1 through 16 protected. And if it doesn't convey, we'll give you our own 2028 pick.
Jesus.
Yeah, so like the way that those picks are established, like it can get complicated for sure. But like I like the fact that it's not their pick that's being held up.
Right.
That it's somebody else's pick.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. It doesn't matter how well the Kings do in 2027 for that pick to convey or not. It only matters what the San Antonio Spurs do.
Yeah, because it belongs to the Spurs, right?
Yeah, yeah. So and I think that's like people are like, oh, well, you know, like are the Kings going to be good or not? That doesn't matter. Yeah. Like it's whether not the Spurs pick. Are going to be good or not.
Yeah. Mitch in New Jersey has been hanging on the line. Mitch, what are your thoughts on Cam Whitmore? Mitch, you're on the Elk Grove Kids talk line. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going,
good, man. What's happening?
Good. Did we get 2 second-round picks? Because I like our second-round center better than the first pick. Of course, we had to give up more assets in the future. But with Ace Bailey, lying about his height, that might have cost him. Does that make it could it be easier to retain him from Utah or even John Collins? Because they had 3 number-one picks from last year and they had 2 this year, so they're getting better. And maybe they have less leverage if Ace Bailey doesn't want to play it because he's a Hall of Famer already, especially that 1 year at Rutgers. Anyway, you have a nice weekend. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Mitch.
Yeah, John Collins opted into his $26.2 million player option for this year.
Not a shock.
Not a shock at all. Would I be totally surprised if the Kings made a run at John Collins again? Not really.
No.
I would not be surprised.
Not at all.
And, again... this isn't something that I'm saying is going to happen, but say you were to move a player like DeMar DeRozan for John Collins, John Collins slides into the starting power forward spot. It allows you to move Keegan Murray back to the 3. Mm-hmm. And then now you have a lot of depth and creativeness that you can do, shot blocker, 3-point shooter, big time scorer, a very good rebounder, John Collins. But I don't know if that's going to happen or not. The Kings have flirted with the John Collins idea, through multiple regimes at this point. They almost acquired him when he was with the Hawks. And then they kicked the tires on him big time last year. But again, it was a player that Mike Brown didn't, necessarily want.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean that they can't trade for him. Mike would have coached the guy. But it was hey, this isn't fitting what we're trying to do. He might fit what Doug's trying to do. Or Doug might not have the same opinion on
sure.
John Collins that Mike did. And so
to me, the John Collins thing.
Yep.
It's you don't watch Love Island USA, right?
No.
Nah, all right, fine. I was going to make a Hood joke, but I don't want to have to explain it. So if you watch the show, you'll understand the Hood joke I was going to make. So anyways, I'm out unless it's the last thing they exhaust. I would like to see them explore every see if Cam Whitmore's available for cheap. Go try and find a point guard. Whatever assets you're going to use in a John Collins trade, see if those are better used or see if those could be used on, like I said, a point guard I guess he would be a 4, but on a player, maybe a younger player on a longer contract. See if there's another fit out there, because the John Collins thing, A, you don't know what version of John Collins you're going to get. B, he's now on a 1 year expiring, which I know you don't hate, but also I think you're trying to build something kind of a little more long term here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you don't want to go to John Collins first. And be like, hey, this is our big offseason acquisition. If you land there, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think there's other things they should be looking for first.
Well, of course, they should be looking for starting point guard first.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's front and center. You need a starting point guard. But look, John Collins is 27. He'll be 28 in September. And John Collins was spectacular last season. He averaged 19 points,
really good.
8.2 rebounds. He shot 39.9% from 3. Again, he can block shots. He averaged a block a game, even though he's playing 30 minutes. I'm not worried about the fact that he only played 40 games. He didn't play 40 games because he played for a team that didn't want to win.
He was healthy for many more than 40
games. He was healthy for a lot more than that.
Does the whole losing thing come up for you at all with this? Because typically when we bring up a player who's on a losing team, you do the thing where you go, oh, well, somebody has to score. Somebody has to do this. Somebody has to do that. Team stinks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does that factor in at all?
I mean, it should factor in a little bit, but at the same time, John Collins is, he played on a team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals in Atlanta.
That's true.
Right? And, he's, my bigger concern is, is he a starter? Is he a coming off the bench and doing crazy things for you guy?
Mm-hmm.
Is he a guy, is he a high basketball IQ player? And that's always going to be the question, especially for a player who, the second he signed anywhere, he's always on the trade block. And, you know, again, you don't have to make it a 1 year thing. You can trade for John Collins and extend him, you know, give him another 2 years and see how that works out for you. But I do always have that like in the back of my mind, man, this dude, you know, he signed a big time contract extension with Atlanta. And the second he signed it, they're trying to trade him.
And
I guess I get people trying to like give, like hold the value of their players and all that stuff. And, you know, you thought you could just move the contract and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It's not the worst thing if they land John Collins this season.
I agree.
But it should be pretty low on their list of priorities, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Go look for something else maybe first. I don't know.
I'm okay.
Very quickly, just to get all the way into the throwback machine, would you rather have John Collins or Cam Johnson? Let's just get back to last year's trade deadline.
Cam Johnson, because he's a better defender, smarter player, but maybe. Like, that's interesting.
All right. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Nick Clifford's college coach, or one of his college coaches, Ali Farouk Manesh, who's now the head coach at Colorado State. He was not the head coach while Nick Clifford was there, but worked very closely with Nick during his 2-year tenure with the Rams. Really excited to get his insights on Nick Clifford, the player, because I don't know that there is a better person to ask about a player than the guy that coached him for 2 years. Coach Farouk Manesh going to join us next from Colorado State. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders. Sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Leader.
Hey guys, it's Daxton.
And Hayden from Blondies Out Loud.
And if you've ever thought about starting a podcast or making money from one,
we use Creator Lab from Odyssey for our show, and it's honestly been so easy.
It's free hosting, and it gives you a really simple way to earn on top of whatever you're already doing.
Which, of course, we love because it just adds another stream without the extra work.
So, if you're a creator or podcast curious,
check it out at creators.odyssey.com.
All right, let's get right to it here on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen, and joining us now, Coach Ali Farouk Manesh. He has been with Colorado State for the last, I believe, 7 years. Is 7 years now, Coach, you've been in that you've been in Fort Collins?
Yeah, 7 years, going on eight now. So it's long time.
Well, congratulations on the recent promotion to the head coaching job there. That's outstanding for you. I'm really happy for you. But I want to get to Nick Clifford. We only got a few minutes with you here, but I want to get to Nick Clifford, who you coached over his 2 years at Colorado State with the Rams. What type of player are the Kings getting with Nick Clifford?
Obviously, I think the first thing that comes to mind when you talk about Nick is his versatility. He truly is a two-way player, and I think he showed that both years with us, to be honest. And then the scoring and the shooting and the playmaking really picked up in his second year. But I mean, he's always been an elite rebounder. I think from a guard position, like he's on the Josh Hart type level of rebounding. From a comparison standpoint, to be honest, it's kind of ironic, but I've always kind of, cause I grew up watching the Kings with them in the Mike Bibby era and whatnot. And Doug Christie comes to mind in some ways. And I think, so it's kind of ironic, but I love the way he competes on the defensive end of the floor. But I think in the last year, what he added to his game is the shot making off the dribble, off the move, off the catch and shoot. And then his secondary playmaking skills. There's not a lot of guys that you can say are true wings defensively that also can make plays for others on the other end of the floor too.
You know, Coach, when you're looking at his development, again, it's not like he was being squandered in Colorado, but when he came to you guys, he just took this massive leap. What has he done off the court that makes you feel like he's going to continue this this sort of, I don't know, aggressive ascension that he has since joining Colorado State?
Yeah, I don't want to say he changed the way he worked when he got to us, but I think he morphed his thinking and his mentality of the way he worked. We became way more intentional with what he was doing in his development. Because everyone gets in the gym, and like he was always going to get better because he loved being in the gym. But the intentionality that he had with his work in terms of his shooting right away when he first got here. We were working on his feet and his balance and then his one motion. And then the next thing we wanted to work on was him playing off 2 feet better. And so once he progressed in that area, then the next year when he came back, it was his shooting off the dribble. And then obviously his ball handling too, because we thought he'd become more of a playmaker in that year too for us. And each one of those things was very specific. And I think you could see that progression happen through those 2 years here. And it all led to this. And it doesn't always work out that way when you have someone that's willing to work, buy into the work. And then the humility that he has, because there's a lot of guys, you tell them what they need to work on and they don't want to hear it. And he was very accepting of what we thought we needed to work on right away. And it was fun to see that progression happen for him that fast. And it's cool to now say that we got 4 guys that are going to be on NBA rosters this coming season.
Talking with Colorado State men's basketball coach Ali Farouk-Manesh. Now, Neek could have come out last year in the draft, but he chose to go back to school there in Fort Collins. What was it? What was A, the reason you think he went back, and B, what were some of the things you think he improved with that extra year in college?
Yeah, honestly, you just don't want to go back to school. That was the biggest thing.
Sure.
Because, I mean, you've been in school up to that. 4 years, he was graduated already. Like, it was kind of, that was one of the biggest things to him. And then it got to the point, it was like, you know, everyone says bet on yourself, and that I took that more as bet on yourself to come back to college to improve your stock. Mm-hmm. And he had basically 6 months, 7 months with us at that point from the time he got here in June to the end of that season. So we thought if we had another 9 months to work on his game, that he would change completely. Because he made that much progress in essentially 7 months. What would he look like with another 9 months with us? And so specifically right away, it was the shooting off the bounce and the ball handling. Because we thought he had Isaiah Stevens the year before that set him up for a lot of plays. And this year we thought he was going to have to make plays for himself and for others more. And that showed up, I mean, in a completely different atmosphere than I think anybody thought, which I thought was ironic. He came out trying to come out the year before, and he only was looked at as a 3-and-D wing. Then this year, now we had teams calling us and being like, well, is he like a secondary point guard type player? And it's like no one even talked to me about that a year ago. So it's a huge credit to him just buying into that work and also having the humility to understand, like, yeah, I'm not good enough in these areas yet. I need to improve. And he did. Like, he made double the amount of threes he made the year before. And the year before that, he made double the amount of threes that he made previously his entire career at Colorado. So the level of growth and development over the 20 months was something that we pride ourselves on, but that doesn't happen with a lot of kids either.
You know, one of the stats that jump out on his box score for me is his free throw attempts jump from 2.3 to 5 from his fourth to fifth season. And, you know, again, before that, he'd capped out at like 1.53 free throw attempts. That shows me that, number one, he's got the ball in his hands more, but also, number two, he's being more physical going to the basket. Is that something that you guys were able to work with him, sort of the development of the off-the-dribble game and getting to the basket, drawing contact?
Absolutely. It's funny you say that, because that was one of the key things that we thought we needed to develop. If you want to be a true scorer, that doesn't mean just making shots. Like, the best scorers in the world get to the free throw line. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, right? Foul merchant. Mm-hmm. So you look at all those guys, like, the best scorers get to the foul line. When they're not making shots, they're still scoring 4 to 5 points a game just at the foul line. And he did a tremendous job of not only getting the line, but also converting once he got to the line. So you're 100. It's funny you point that out, because we made a sheet prior to the season, and that was one of the 4 things that we needed to work on and grow in. And that's what he did. I mean, he went from 12 points a game. If you just add the free throws right there, he's already at 15 to 16. And then obviously you add some more scoring and playmaking at the rim, and he got to 19 to 20 points a game.
Ali Farouk-Manesh, he's the head coach of Colorado State. He helped coach Neek Clifford during his 2 years there. What type of guy is he? Is he quiet? Is he a vocal leader? Tell me about him as a person.
He's the most elite teammate you're ever going to have. And I think there's the one thing that I can point to, the story that always comes to mind to me is, so he was at Colorado before. Obviously, Colorado State don't like each other. So that year, his first year with us, we beat Colorado at home, so they really don't like us now. But then some of his best friend, Tristan Da Silva, who's now with the Orlando Magic, they're having senior night in Colorado, and we're off. I think we had like a 2-day break or something. Well, he decides to drive up from Fort Collins to Boulder, which is about a 35, 40-minute drive, on Tristan's senior night. Was up for Tristan Da Silva's senior night. I don't know too many guys that would do that in general, but much less you're going into enemy territory at the same time. Yeah. And I think that just speaks volumes to the type of teammate he is as well. You're not only getting an elite basketball player, but the type of teammate that you want not only with the other guys in your locker room, but also in the community.
That's outstanding. Coach, thank you so much for your time, man. Know you're super busy this time of year, so really appreciate you hopping on with us, telling us about Neat Clifford, and best of luck with the head job there at Colorado State.
No, I appreciate it, guys. You got some new Sactown fans now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Coach.
Thank you.
Coach Ali Farouk Manesh.
Really good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Shout out. Understood the assignment. The thing that this is so cheesy and cliche, but the teammate thing is my favorite part of that.
Oh, yeah.
Like all the stuff about, oh, he worked and he was he had the humility to know what he needed to work on and he was really hard worker. Okay. Like that's all great. But the stuff about being a good teammate is not even for like, hey, locker room and hey, he's got vibes guy. But that to me says, he's not the type of player who's going to come in and go, okay, well, hey, I've been working on my ball handling and my scoring, so that's what I'm going to do here. Like, no, it seems like the kind of person who's just going to, hey, whatever's good for the team.
Yeah, and I'm going to point out, too, like, staying in college now, like, the 5 years that he played,
mm-hmm.
I've talked about this a bunch about, you know, again, this is a kid who is, what, a 2002 birth year. Mm-hmm. Which means he lost the last half of his senior year. His first 2 years at Colorado, most of his classes were via Zoom. They, you know, mm-hmm. they might have had some in-person stuff, but
sure.
probably not. You know, he's playing in an empty gym part of his college career. Like, all of these things happen, but developing at the NBA level is so incredibly difficult. Developing at the college level, you can take a player during one off season and have him go from a guy who barely gets to the free throw line at 2.3 times per game and double that to 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the player I'm going to point to right now is Keegan Murray. Like, Keegan Murray does not get to the free throw line nearly enough.
Not even close.
For his size and for his athleticism and everything else. Now, part of that's because the Kings put him in the corner a lot and have him shooting. But a lot of it is also just because he hasn't figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, working with a guy like DeMar DeRozan can help you figure that out. But this kid was able to go back to college, stay in, and then really, really create a different style of player for himself. He was a 3-and-D guy. Now he's a jack-of-all-trades guy. He's, you know, the Swiss Army knife of the first mm-hmm. round. And some of this is, like, it's really impressive, like, the stats you're looking at. The fact that, you know, his third year in college, he's averaging 3.9 rebounds a game. And by his senior year, he's averaging 9.6, including 8.1 defensive rebounds a game.
That's so crazy.
You know, a guy who, again, averaged 0.4 assists, 1.3 and 1.5 in his first 3 years in college, averaged 4.4 in his final year. Okay? That, like, you got better.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't just stick around in college and drink more beer and have more fun. Mm-hmm. You got better as a basketball player, and you made yourself into a completely different style of player going into the NBA draft.
Yeah, there's and what that does is, okay, that might lower his ceiling because we've found out more about who he is as a player. There's less guesswork involved,
mm-hmm.
but you raise your floor really substantially. If you can come into the NBA, be pesky defender guy, be able to create a little bit for yourself off the dribble, but largely just hang out, knock down a three when the ball comes to you, and go rebound. Like, how many times have we been like, man, Keegan Murray being a more consistent rebounder would be a big deal. Got Harrison Barnes. Can you go get me 8 rebounds one game, Harrison? Like, we've been wanting this type of player. And Devin Carter, to his credit, was that right off the bat. Just came into the league, knew how to rebound.
Yep.
And so if you can just, if you can do those little things that affect winning, I think it'll go a long way for Neat Clifford and the Sacramento Kings. All right, that's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. D'Lo and KC are next. We're done for the week. We'll be back with you on Monday, though, when we'll have some free agency for you.
Yeah.
No, free agency starts Monday.
Starts Monday. It's going to get wild.
Starts Monday at 3. But we'll have some legal negotiating window stuff for you because that opens on Sunday.
Okay.
The legal negotiating window. The 30th? That's Sunday?
I think Monday's the 30th.
Monday's That's the 30th. When the legal negotiating window opens. Here we go. Anyways, we're going to be done now, as you can tell. D'Lo and KC next for James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. This is ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center. Drink water, be nice to people.
Bye. I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.